Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. After lots and lots and lots of speculation, Illinois' longest-serving elected senator says he's stepping aside.
There comes a point in your career when the torch is supposed to be passed, and I've reached that point. I will not be seeking re-election to this United States Senate seat.
Senator Dick Durbin's retirement is expected to unleash a flood of would-be successors, with Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton first out of the gate.
He energized the church to move forward. He gave us a more expansive view of what we could be, especially as he called us to be a field hospital in the world.
Chicagoans join mourners around the world remembering the late Pope Francis as Cardinal Blaise Cupich prepares to help choose a successor.
We have started our budget process earlier than ever before because the challenges that we face are greater than what we've experienced before.
Mayor Brandon Johnson sounds the alarm on city finances and sounds off on former Mayor Rahm Emanuel. State Senator Emil Jones III's time in court ends in a mistrial, while convicted Highland Park shooter Robert Cremo will spend the rest of his life behind bars.
I'm so glad to be a Chicago Bear and part of you guys' history. It's an honor and a privilege.
And Chicago Bears fans mourn the loss of Hall of Famer Steve McMichael to ALS.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune, Sarah Karp from WBEZ, Quinn Myers from Block Club Chicago, and joining us from Washington via Zoom is Clarence Page, Pulitzer-winning contributing columnist, also from the Chicago Tribune. Let's get right to it, Rick, after what feels like a period of speculation that lasted almost as long as his most recent term. Senator Dick Durbin announces he will not seek re-election next year. Were you surprised by this decision?
Most people weren't. I will tell you, in the couple of months leading up to this, and I would go and go out to events and talk to him about his decision coming, and I wasn't really sure that he was necessarily going to leave, that he sounded like he enjoyed the work, felt challenged by the Trump administration, but also there was that collegiality aspect of it. They call it, you know, the most exclusive club in the world, the Club of 100. And he even talked about, you know, even though Republicans had taken over the majority, he talked about how his relationships with Lindsey Graham from South Carolina and other Republicans. So, yeah, we kind of all knew it was, but I think it was more a matter of him coming to terms with the decision.
Yeah, and it certainly seemed like after, you know, Trump's reelection that he was maybe having some, whether it was second thoughts or just thinking that I'm still the guy for this job, I want to stay in the fight.
Yeah, I mean, one of the events I went to was a protest out in Federal Plaza, and it was raining and it was snowing, and he was out there and he spoke for 20 minutes, didn't wear a hat. And afterwards I said, so do you still have the fire? He goes, Rick, I was just standing there for 20 minutes about issues I still care very passionately about.
Yeah. Well, you know, Clarence Page, Durbin is the number two Democrat in the Senate, former chair of the Judiciary Committee. You know, Illinois is a solidly blue state, so, you know, they're not necessarily likely to lose the seat. But is this a blow to Democrats given Durbin's long tenure and significant experience in that chamber?
In some ways, yeah, because Durbin is widely beloved. I mean, he's a man who's been a part of the scene for how many decades now? Four or five. It's remarkable. I've covered him for many years, just like Rick. It's interesting. This is also a changing time. You know, this is a time where there's a generation gap in the Senate and in the House between Republicans and Democrats. And between Democrats and Democrats, there's a lot of frustration right now since the big loss in last year's presidential race. And there's a lot of folks feel like, Durbin is an institutionalist, widely respected. He knows the Supreme Court and the rest of the judiciary system inside and out. But these days, you've got a lot of younger Democrats who want to be more pugilistic, like the Trump people, and they want to engage the other side more. And that's not Durbin's style. So in that sense, I wasn't surprised to see him go any more than I was surprised when Joe Biden went. It wasn't a question of when, or whether it was a question of whether, but a question of when.
I do think this is maybe we'll see, look back at this as the beginning of the changing of the guard. I mean, the Joe Biden impact here is clear. I think, you know, we're going to hear news about Jan Schakowsky's future in the next couple of weeks. There are already some reporting that she is planning to retire. So I do think Democrats are looking at what happened with Joe Biden and saying we do, especially older Democrats, we do maybe need to cede our offices here to some younger generations.
But there's one factor to remember, too, is that when you talk about Washington, you talk about the House and the Senate, especially the Senate, it's about seniority and longevity. And this is going to hurt Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you know, to that point, you know, whoever is coming in and taking over, they won't have that longevity, but there are some pretty big name folks expected to jump in. I mean, we've got the lieutenant governor. You know, are we expecting cavalcade here?
Well, I mean, you've certainly have the House members who know how the game is played. Mm-hmm. Juliana Stratton, certainly with the endorsement of the Governor Pritzker, the running mate, is presents a formidable candidate, but she hasn't played the Washington game.
Right.
And so, you know, and there is a learning curve when it comes to D.C. politics and the pecking order for getting things done.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see if Governor Pritzker puts some of his formidable money behind her, if he's endorsing her.
He will. Yeah. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, he's not going to give her the nod if he's not going to open up the checkbook, too.
Correct.
Well, you know, we mentioned up at the top of the show, Cardinal Blaise Cupich has arrived in Vatican City ahead of the funeral for the late Pope Francis. You know, Sarah Karp, we saw a real outpouring of grief among Chicagoans. Does that demonstrate something about Francis's appeal, even just beyond Catholics?
Yeah, I do think so, because he took up a lot of issues that, you know, traditionally the Catholic Church didn't take up. I mean, he talked to people's humanity, and I think that that's what people are responding to. And, you know, maybe even, too, because of this moment. You know, he did a lot of outreach to immigrants, to, you know, people in Gaza, and I think that those are issues, you know, that extend beyond the Catholic Church, and they just speak to morality and, you know, where we are in this moment with a lot of, you know, lines being crossed that haven't been crossed in the past. So I think that, you know, I'm not Catholic. I was sad to see him go.
Yeah. You know, Clarence Page, to Sarah's point, many of Francis's messages, they are somewhat at odds with, you know, Republican politicians currently leading Washington. You know, how does someone like a Catholic convert, J.D. Vance, square his policies with Francis's? Or does he simply overlook them and sort of interpret the church's teachings in a different way when it comes to politics?
Well, we certainly saw the exchange that Vance and the Pope had last week on the Pope's last day with us, in fact. He was perturbed that Vance had this view of a concentric circles of care, if I'm not butchering the Pope's quote too badly there. But Vance was talking about how you need to take care of your family and home first and the rest of the world later. And the Pope admonished him, said, no, there are not concentric circles of caring. You must care for everyone. You must help the poor, whoever they are. And that's a little different, obviously, than the approach that the current Republican administration has toward problems of poverty. The Pope has dealt with this before, though. We've had other presidents who were a lot more conservative than him and whoever was the Pope at the time. But they eventually, the Pope still has his influence, and the church is still an important institution, especially in Chicago, probably the most Catholic city in the country. This is a very important event that is leaving a lot of people mourning his loss.
Yeah, I think a lot of people locally are going to be paying very close attention to what happens.
Well, and who the successor is going to be, because this could also involve a shift back to the previous kind of more rigid ideology. That where does that fit into society today in the United States?
Yeah. Well, turning our focus back home, we saw Mayor Johnson this week launching a sort of a budget task force to get ahead of some of the pretty big fiscal challenges on the horizon. Quinn Myers, how tough of a spot is the city likely to be in the coming years?
I mean, an extremely tough spot. We know that, and the mayor himself has said this is what the projected budget gap, over $1 billion this year, could be more next year and could climb even farther depending on if the federal government tries to cut even more federal funding from Chicago. So the mayor is, yes, trying to get out ahead of it, but also is also responding to a lot of criticism he took last year for starting the budget process late, essentially, and running up almost into Christmas. I was covering the budget, and there was a time when we thought we might be in the council chambers after Christmas, before New Year's, and they, you know, not sure if they were going to pass a budget. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But he took a lot of criticism from even progressive alder people about the whole process. So he's at least signaling that maybe he's going to be more open this year to a smoother process. But whether that actually happens, we'll see. And then, you know, the big question is an actual property tax increase going to come back this year?
And it's very interesting, too, that he opened the door to layoffs because, you know, ever since he was running, he's very, you know, been very strict on that. He does not want to cut people. He does not want to cut services. But, you know, maybe as he's going into his, you know, his third year now, is that the, is
third,
his third year?
Third,
yeah.
Third budget.
It goes so quick. But, I mean, but, you know, he's probably facing, you know, seeing that there's a reality there, and especially if he wants to raise property taxes, he might need to show that he's also, you know, being a little more austere.
But at the same time, now he was talking about going to Springfield,
right?
Which he could actually save taxpayers money by not going to Springfield, because the answer is going to be no.
Well, and especially this late in the
session. Well, yes, and as the governor even pointed out when asked about it, the state budget is put together, you know, at the end of the previous year.
Right.
So coming down now in the last month of session, when it's a matter, and there's still issues in trying to finalize what the state's going to be, because like the city, federal funding issues are kind of up and down. Who knows? But coming now, no.
And then there's this, you know, the CPS municipal budget, all this stuff. I mean, will the city have to cover pension payments again? It's going to be messy, as it always is, but especially this year, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a, I mean, CPS is going to be a nightmare this year. They're facing a huge budget deficit, and they were just saying at the meeting last night that they're going to bring a whole contingent to Springfield, but
no.
At this point, what is the point?
Right, the budget is pretty well baked by the time the governor stands up there and makes his address.
As are the state revenues.
Right.
It's not, you know, and I think that's been one of the frustrations from Springfield legislators, is that kind of view of looking at Springfield. They don't print money there, and they're not anxious about having to try to raise taxes anytime, especially heading into an election year.
Certainly not. Well, you know, speaking of some of that Democratic infighting, Quinn, we also saw the mayor taking some swipes at his predecessor, Rahm Emanuel.
A couple of swipes.
You know, is he trying to add his voice to the chorus to stop some sort of an Emanuel political comeback, you think?
Sure. We were just talking about it. I mean, Brandon Johnson has never been a fan of Rahm Emanuel, to put that lightly. I mean, his political career was really jump-started and defined by opposing Mayor Emanuel's decision to close almost 50 schools across Chicago. That forged Brandon Johnson into the political person he became. So this wasn't surprising. I was a little surprised that he chose to do this now and go after him. But, you know, Rahm has been making the rounds on the podcast circuit, I guess, talking about how Democrats seem to get out of the bathroom and get into the classroom, basically getting away from these cultural war issues to kitchen table issues. Possibly positioning himself, I don't know if for mayor or for a higher office. So I do think Mayor Johnson is trying to take him down a peg. Whether that will work or not, though, I'm not so sure.
Interesting seeing our current and our most recent mayor having jumped in because they were angry at Rahm Emanuel. I wonder if we've got a third one coming someday.
Well, everybody can be angry at Rahm Emanuel.
Right, right.
But I mean, some of the things, and I understand to the current mayor's point, some of the things that he has been talking about, issues about, you know, focus on the classroom, focus on policing. Let's look at the record of Rahm Emanuel. You point out about closing schools, hurting neighborhoods where those schools closed. What was Rahm Emanuel's record on policing?
Right. Trying to bury Laquan McDonald.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of some of those schools, Sarah Karp, we saw the Chicago Board of Education finally bless the new teacher's contract this week, bringing that long saga to an end. They also approved a new Black Student Success Plan, even amid the federal government targeting anything that even looks like DEI. Tell us a little bit about what that plan is.
So this plan is about 2-3 years coming. It was sort of spurred by this group of West Side activists who were saying, you know, you got to look at the fact that Black students lag in so many metrics in Chicago public schools. You know, higher dropout rates, higher suspensions, higher absenteeisms, lower test scores, you know, so many different metrics, and really pushing the school district to look at this. And it came when the school district had actually started a special education committee. And so they were saying, like, no, we need a special education committee, but we also need this other committee. It was written into the law that created the elected school board to have this committee. And they finally, you know, they finally just got it underway. Now, there's already a complaint by a national group over the Black Student Success Plan, which this committee is supposed to monitor. So we are, you know, watching to see how the federal government will react, because, you know, Trump is very much against these, like, you know, diversity, inclusion, equity, and maybe they'll consider this, you know, part of that.
Yeah. Well, some other CPS news. The outgoing CEO, Pedro Martinez, headed for a job out east. What are the details there?
So he's going to be the head of the Massachusetts Board of Education. You know, I hope people won't get mad at me for saying this, but it's kind of a demotion, because running a big city school district, Boston, like in Massachusetts, that's a very big job, and it's a lot of pressure on you. Running states, school, you know, education departments is not as big a deal. I mean, think about how many times we talk about, like, Tony Sanders, who's the head of the Illinois State Board. Not near as much as we talk about the CPS CEO. So it's a little bit of a different, you know, thing. And, you know, there he won't have to deal with, he won't have to negotiate with teacher unions. And so that's a big deal. You know, people think that maybe the CTU had something with him not getting another job in Nevada where he would have had to deal with teacher unions. So, I'm not saying, like, it's a bad job, but I'm just saying it's a different,
it's administrative. That was totally administrative.
Right. But, you know, given the last few months he's had as the head of a school district, maybe he's okay with that.
Right, he'd like to be in a calm place. And states are, you know, they're having to fight the Trump administration on a lot of issues. So I think that in that way, it will be a little more high profile.
Yeah. Well, Governor J.B. Pritzker recently, he's moved to sort of punish El Salvador for its role in detaining a wrongly deported Maryland man. Clarence Page, you wrote this week that, you know, the Kilmer Abrego Garcia's treatment feels like something sort of out of the Twilight Zone. Why, what brings that to mind for you?
Or a Kafka play, you know. I just read the Prisoner, and where a man is swept off the streets, he's locked up and not told what the charge is, not even told where the courtroom is that he's supposed to meet them. And this is about the way Abrego Garcia has been treated, that he was taken away by ICE, and they took him to El Salvador, another country, and he is down there, and the administration there admits that, and our administration here admits they made a mistake, but neither is taking any steps to try to correct that mistake. And there's just a sense now that the Trump administration is so eager to put people in prison or take them into custody or kick them out of the country, but they don't worry about things like due process. So we've got this big debate going on here in real time.
Well, and Clarence, you know, another Trump administration move trying to get folks out of the country kind of pulled an about face on this, you know, plan to terminate legal status for international students. They're still trying to put pressure on universities, including in Illinois, over, you know, diversity programs. Why is higher education such a target for Trump?
But don't forget the judge who was arrested today for allegedly helping a undocumented resident to walk out the door. This is all part of the Trump program here, and it's hard to say how much of it is actually aimed at solving problems, because it's not really doing much of that, but it's certainly publicizing Trump's toughness a lot, and that seems to be the performative message that his administration is trying to put out there. But people are getting hurt.
No, I think Clarence is right. I mean, it's certainly, there's that bullying aspect of it. But, you know, Democrats have a real problem here, and Clarence brought up the fact it's trying, for some, it's about separating due process and the fundamental concept of due process versus the Republicans' arguments that, oh, you're trying to bring a gang member, not alleged, or it hasn't even been proven, but you're trying to bring a gang member back to the country. What's your priorities here? It's hard to argue due process because it sounds so mundane, but it's a fundamental right that all of us are entitled to.
Yeah. Well, a couple high-profile legal cases this week. Convicted Highland Park Parade gunman getting a life sentence for each of the people that he murdered. You know, Sarah Karp, we saw the Illinois assault weapons ban after this, which is, of course, still being challenged in court. Not much action at the national level. I mean, I forgive me for the obvious question, but do we expect that to change anytime soon?
No.
All right. Next.
I don't know. I mean, well, Trump is in office and the Republicans control, Congress. So, I mean, unless you know something I don't, I'm not thinking it's going to change very soon.
Yeah. Well, I just think it was very heartbreaking that you had all these victim impact statements.
Yeah.
And the perpetrator couldn't show up and face what you really did.
Yeah. Well, another case we've been watching, State Senator Emil Jones III's bribery case, ending in a mistrial. Think prosecutors might try to go make another run at this?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I will say that, this kind of fundamentally came on the issue of, as in my interpretation, and I didn't go see it, but as a bribe versus a campaign contribution. And there was no action ultimately taken if this was a bribe.
Right.
So I think, and of course you have different definitions now in the federal government of what bribery is these days, but I just don't think it was very clear that the prosecutors made that case that it was a bribe. And I think the defense really did a very good job. And, you had Emil III on the stand, which you never see.
It's a risky proposition, but
it seems to have paid off. Yeah.
And we've seen prosecutors in Chicago struggle recently on some of these public corruption cases to get convictions. So I'm interested to see,
remember, this prosecution unit used to be like 99%.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in the past few, they've missed trial. I mean, partial verdict in the Madigan trial. So. Yeah, we'll see if they do pursue
this. The AT&T case as well, yeah. Certainly not quite the sterling record that they once had.
You know, from the outside, I'm always fascinated to listen to or to read how politicians talk to each other and how all these deals go down and all the coded language that they use. I mean, I don't think that we really get that insight until you read the wiretaps and just their back and forth. And in this case, there were some exchanges. I was like, wow, that's... that's really how they deal. I don't know. So.
I will say, after the Burke case, landing the tuna did make its way into my lexicon for a while.
Right, yeah.
Get a peek behind the curtain there.
Yeah.
Well, and let's not forget Rod Blagojevich.
Something that's in gold, and I'm not giving it away for nothing.
Right.
That's right. Well, as we mentioned, up at the top, Chicago Bears great Steve McMichael died this week after a pretty heartbreaking battle with ALS. Rick, what kind of a legacy does he leave behind for Bears fans?
I think his legacy, as great as a football player as he was, especially 85 Super Bowl Bears, I think his legacy is actually for his character and his fighting the ALS and the fact that I think, thankfully for everybody, that he was able to be inducted into the Football Hall of Fame while he was still alive. He was a tremendous, tremendous part of that 85 Bears defense. And, with the name Mongo, he lived up to it.
Yeah, but it does seem that, maybe helping to turn the tide in some of the, whether it's stigma or just a desire for ultimate privacy around this, to shine a little bit more of a light on an issue like this.
Absolutely. And he just did it with such grace.
Yeah. Well, you all were very graceful panelists. We appreciate your insights, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Rick Pearson, Sarah Karp, Quinn Myers, and Clarence Page. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family. The Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by...
And that's our show for this Friday night. If you're looking for more context and analysis on the stories that matter to you, be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. That's at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. Okay, one of the weekend activities we all enjoy in the summer, we're hearing street fair organizers saying they're kind of falling on hard times, but we were talking earlier, it feels like there's about a half dozen any given weekend.
They're just not seeing, they say, the gate donations, right? The 10 bucks suggested donation that they used to. I think there are a variety of factors, though. Yeah, maybe there's too many to go to on a given Saturday, or maybe people don't feel like the money is going back into their community. I think there's some reasonable conversation.
I think there's a real question. What is that donation going for?
Right. That's
or
what you want to know.
Who is it going to?
Right. Is it just going to pay the head of the Chamber of Commerce, right. You know, versus...
Well, yeah. or maybe if they said the donations were more transparent about, is this for neighborhood improvement, is it that kind of thing?
Right.
Well, it's really just to put on the fair, right? That's really what it's about. It's not even about any of that.
But it's like all the 5Ks and 10Ks that you're like, is this a charity thing or am I just running along the lake?
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm serving Chicago for 37 years.